Hey y'all, welcome to another episode of Jesse's Fireside Chats. In this episode, I'm going to be further fleshing out and clarifying my theory that academia is one big racket. So, buckle your seatbelts, this episode is called The Academic Racket Revisited. Let's get started. So, to first set the stage, I have talked in several episodes on things such as experts, modern universities, academia. I even did another episode called The Academic Racket, which is why this is the revisited version. And I've talked about my thoughts, which is that academia has a lot of flaws, and that experts are held up much higher than they should be, and that the product you receive for the money that you pay has gone down as the amount of money you've paid has gone up when it comes to tuition versus the quality of your education, that the tuition rate has gone up much faster than inflation. Meanwhile, the product you get for that tuition money, the education you receive, has gone down, has gone off a cliff, I would say. And a lot of that has been reserved for universities, and a lot of today's talk will be reserved mostly for universities. However, before we go much further, I would like to note that K-12 schools should not be held blameless here, because while test scores are far from a perfect metric, and they should not be seen as such, and many people across the political spectrum want to treat them as either perfect or worthless, they're only one metric, and they don't tend to be perfect because the tests are designed for those who can retain a crap ton of information and focus in a quiet environment. Two things that not everyone can do very well. So not everybody is the optimal test taker. I myself struggle with taking tests because of the lack of background noise that is permitted and whatnot. Like when there's no background noise, I'll hear myself think, and that will be more distracting than any music ever could be. So taking tests was never my strong suit. However, test scores are not completely worthless. They do show that in the last 50 years or so, there has been a decline in things like math and history and science. Now, granted, not all science, as you know my thoughts, not all science, I think, is legitimate. There's a lot of science that is deeply biblically flawed and politically convenient for the people who stand against everything we stand for. I mean, I did a whole episode on how evolution is a lie, but there are some parts of science that are important, like, the earth science, not all, because again, they want to claim the earth is much older than it is and that kind of thing. However, you know, that doesn't mean all science should be thrown out with the bathwater. I mean, if you don't know how gravity works, you're going to have problems. You need to understand space to be able to understand how satellites work, and satellites are very important for modern telecommunications and whatnot. So before I get us fully into the weeds, we have noticed that test scores have gone down, and that is worth noting. As I said, it's not a perfect metric of how everyone's doing, but it is a metric. It is worth examining. It is just one measurement, but it is a measurement. It is a statistic that should be taken into account when looking at how, say, the Department of Education has affected the educational landscape and the political landscape. I mean, is it any coincidence that in a society where history test scores are declining, you see more advocacy for totalitarianism and, if not the full-scale package, at least the policies such as gun confiscations? I don't think that's a coincidence. I mean, I don't believe in coincidences, But I still don't think that that is that you can just write that off as not being a connection worth noting. Because if people don't learn history, they're more likely to repeat it, as we know full well. So now the question we should look at is, where did the rot begin? Because academia was not always a racket, I don't think. Some people might say it is from the start. I don't know for sure if anyone would say that, but I wouldn't. I do think that a few hundred years ago, in the 1600s, 1700s, when some of the institutions we know today were being founded, and a lot of later institutions would follow a lot of the same like practices and layouts and whatnot as these earlier ones, because people learn by example. When some of these earlier colleges and institutions were being founded, I do think that their founders, or at least some of them, were men who truly wanted to build a well-ordered, virtuous, Christian, and well-educated society. They wanted to create institutions that would produce well-rounded doctors, lawyers, politicians, etc. However, I do think that at some point, somewhere along the line, academia lost the plot. I'm not exactly sure when the rot started, because this is definitely a one bad apple situation. Which apple was it? We don't know. And it was probably located somewhere further down in the bottom of the barrel, and then spread to the others. And when exactly that happened, I'm not entirely sure, although I think it was definitely in full swing in the 60s when institutions started to go hard left. You started to have more of the high-profile protests. You started to have more college students traveling from their universities into areas that were living in a way that the university didn't like, and thus then trying to lecture the people of that area and get them into line, so to speak. You had more activists coming from universities, and you had more of these students entering the workforce then, and so spreading the university's ideas into the workforce, and by extension, more of the real world. I do think that was definitely happening by the 60s. When it started, I couldn't exactly say. However, I will note that, the late 19th, early 20th century was a time when a lot of academic disciplines were being more formalized, for better and for worse. Yes, medicine was starting to be a bit more formally organized, which is good, because if people should know where their organs are and what arsenic does and that kind of stuff. However, that was also when you started to see the increased push for trusting the experts, which I guess you could argue was kind of a tendency that always existed throughout human history to organize society around experts. Because, I mean, you had in ancient times, you had, one king ruled over an entire society, and you had support for concepts like philosopher kings and such. And then in the medieval era, the Catholic Church, and the feudal lords and the kings ran basically everything. And then you had the Enlightenment, which was kind of a pendulum swing in the other direction, where everybody was questioning everything. And I would argue that a lot of Enlightenment ideas were not the best for society, because rejecting the Bible is never a good thing. But now you have this push to trust the experts, the academics, the professors, those with a PhD or some other combination of letters behind their name. And I don't think that's great either. And so then that does kind of beg the question of, when did the rot start? But now that we've covered that, let's get into the characteristics of this rot, because I think there are I'm not sure if you could say three or four because some might be kind of characteristics that are tied to the other characteristics. So that'll be kind of up for you to decide. But the first thing is, I think that the overemphasis on style allows academics, not only professors, but also, grad students that are being taught to do research in the same way, undergrads, etc. It allows these academics to do less research, but still be given the same benefits as they would receive if they were doing more research in that increased amount of time. So, what do I mean by that? Well, if an academic spends, let's just say, 100 hours doing research, and then let's just say 10 hours drafting the paper and proofreading and all that. Still, like, not plagiarizing, but just mentioning, according to such and such, or providing the links to the articles, because let's face it, we live in a world where most information that most people would need to work with can be found online. Even if you can also find it on paper, it's easier to find it online. And I'm all for putting information online. I think that all ideas should be not bound by what physical library they are carried in. I mean, maybe not all ideas in the sense that, like, sinful ideas, but all ideas that are necessary, excuse me, for our society. All necessary ideas should not be bound by their location, meaning that if you can't travel to some library in England, that shouldn't prevent you from being able to know whatever historical or scientific or mathematical idea you need to know that would be contained there, because it should also be available on the internet. And I'm sure a lot of people share that view with me, but that is my view. So, if academics provide the links to all the sources, according to whatever the link is or the title, that should be sufficient. And if they put quotes around something that is an actual quote, that's good too. But if they don't spend a bunch of time figuring out how to format all these in-text citations and trying to find an in-text citation for everything. Oh, the sky is blue, according to John Smith. Well, why do you need John Smith to confirm that the sky is blue? We know that. So if they don't spend a bunch of time fiddling with all of that, well, then that's more time that they have to spend actually doing research, doing studies, experiments, or reading articles, or reading studies, or reading about experiments others have done in that area, or collecting statistics, or whatever it may be. So, if instead of spending 100 hours reading research, doing studies, etc., as I just laid out, if they spend 80 hours doing all of that, and then 20 hours farting around with works cited pages and in-text citations and formatting, making sure the font's all the right size and the margins, etc. Well, then that's 20 less hours of actual work they have to do, but they can still document it as 100 hours of research. So they can still get paid, if they're getting paid, for 100 hours of research. And or they can still have a due date that is later, as if they were doing 100 hours of research. So it's advantageous for them, because that means they can still get the same benefits without doing as much of the work, because instead of doing more research, they are wasting time with style. So that's the first prong of it. And the fact that they're always changing the style, too. The fact that the style guide always changes. That's another cue right there. Because if the style was really important, it would stay the same, except if there's a new medium of information gathering. Like, you know, when the internet first came out, obviously they had to figure out how you cite internet sources if they were going to focus on style. If the style was actually important, you would obviously need to come up with a way to do that. But the fact that they're always changing the style, that and the formatting, that shows you that the style is not actually important. That they're just using it as a way to waste time and get paid more and get the later due dates and not be held socially to the same standard. It also helps them with tenure because, again, more time that they spend writing their papers without doing as much research, that means that's less research they have to do to get tenure or other career advancements. Because a lot of times to get tenure at a university, they'll have a requirement of how many papers you should publish. And how much time you should spend doing research. So there's that. Then the second thing that causes academia to be a racket is that they claim to be in the constant pursuit of knowledge. However, academia runs on groupthink. Not only because, especially in the sciences, your article has to be peer-reviewed, which by definition means that someone else has to agree with what you have said, meaning that if you have any new thoughts or new ideas, new connections you want to pursue, it's going to be 10 times harder for you because you're challenging somebody else's preconceived notions or another institution's or journal's preconceived notions. So it's designed to run on groupthink, especially because in order to get your papers published, they have to often be peer-reviewed, especially, again, in the sciences. So if you want tenure, or if you want, you know, just to get that paper published, you have to get it peer-reviewed, which means somebody else has to agree with you, which then fuels groupthink and stifles new ideas and different approaches and questions from being considered, because it's harder to convince people to give the go-ahead to something that challenges their preconceived notions, because people are biased, and they always have been, and they always will be. And considering that sciences are the field that would probably have the most new information out there, good and bad, to evaluate, they're the field where you would want the most freedom, but they are the field that relies the most on peer reviewing and things like that, that are set up to favor groupthink. Science and medicine is set up like that. So if, you know, these institutions can claim that they are pursuing knowledge, but then they set up these roadblocks, well, that leads into the next point, which is that universities and institutions, educational institutions like them, claim that they're about the pursuit of knowledge. Of course they claim that, because then they can get more grants and more positive social clout than if they admitted what they actually are, which is that they are more akin to think tanks now. Because universities pretty much almost exclusively lean left. So of course, that, in addition to groupthink, actually they're very interconnected, is going to influence what the university teaches and what it considers to be within acceptable boundaries of content worth considering. So if these institutions, such as universities, admit that they are more closely related to think tanks, that they are think tanks and not institutions of higher learning or learning in general, well then they won't be able to justify collecting educational grants anymore, because it's hard to claim you're educational if you're not about pursuing knowledge. That's the definition of educational, is something that pursues knowledge and wants to and teaches it to other people so that they can have that knowledge too. Like, that is literally the definition of educational. So if an institution admits that its purpose is now no longer to pursue and distribute knowledge, but is instead to prop up a certain viewpoint, well then it's no longer an educational institution, it's a think tank. So it misses out on, grants, donations, and things like that, social clout that is reserved for educational institutions. Parents are not going to send their kids, at least most are not going to send their kids to a seminar set up by a think tank, are they? Or a curriculum set up by a think tank, are they? No, but they are happy to send their kids to college or university where they think that they're getting an education. So it is only within these universities and other institutions' best interest to at least keep up appearances and pretend that they are still about the pursuit and distribution of knowledge. So that's kind of the next point that makes it a racket. And then the other point is that in addition to the groupthink, in addition to the claims that they are still about pursuing knowledge when they're really not, a very interrelated claim to that last claim is that, the pursuit of knowledge is supposed to be about just that, building up what we have, making it better, increasing our understanding of the world around us. And not only are these universities no longer about that because they're only about pursuing one viewpoint, but academia has now created entire fields that are about the opposite of upbuilding, the opposite of creating, but are about destroying what we already have. So, if a better example or a better comparison that might help you than a think tank for this would be, imagine if you wanted to major in astronomy. But instead of telling you about all the planets and the stars and the moons that exist, they told you that space doesn't exist. That would be a very flagrant, much more flagrant than even these institutions are willing to allow. But that should help you understand what's happening here. If imagine you wanted to major in space science, and instead of telling you about what all is out there in space, they just told you that, none of that's real. There's no such thing as space. That's essentially what's happening here. Because instead, it's especially in the humanities, and history. Critical race theory and critical gender theory are two very prominent examples of this type of destructive discipline. Because instead of advancing our understanding of history or of literature or of what things were like in the past or what things are like in other parts of the world today, these types of fields just destroy everything. They look for things in the past that they can label as racist, or they take history and instead of teaching it, they twist it, distort it into something that's not even how things actually were, or something that's only how things were in rare circumstances. So like an example would be when it comes to the CRT apologists, when they're teaching about slavery. We all know slavery is bad. If you have a brain, you know slavery is bad. It's that simple. But they will try to point to American slavery as the worst form that was out there, which is objectively false. Because we know that, for example, when the Aztecs took prisoners, they would sacrifice them. They would actually rip the prisoner's heart out while he was still alive. And then in Africa, there were some parts of Africa, not all of Africa, but there were parts of Africa where slaves could find themselves being eaten, fattened up and eaten. So those are two things that didn't really happen, as far as we know, here. But the CRT apologists would have us believe that they are what happened, or that if they're not, at least they didn't happen anywhere else. Because you would have to deny that in order to say that what happened here was the worst form that ever existed. So these fields, these critical fields, it's in the name, even critical race theory or critical gender theory. If it's critical, if something is a critical theory, then in the name, that tells you that it is tearing down what's already there. If I make a movie, versus if I critique a movie that's already been made. Now, that's not saying that all critiques are bad, but these critical theories are very, very bad because they distort the truth, especially when teaching to young, impressionable people who can't see the difference between, you know, these exaggerations and distortions and real life. So these theories are extremely dishonest. But back to my movie analogy. If I make a movie versus if you make a movie and I critique it, my critique is not creating a new movie. My critique is only talking about a movie that's already out there. And if my critique is negative in nature, as these critical theories are negative in nature, then my critique is tearing down what you've built. So that is what's happening with these critical theories, is they're not creating anything new. They're just tearing down what's already there. And if the purpose of education is to, you know, collect and distribute knowledge, then they are doing the exact opposite, because they're not only not collecting knowledge, they're tearing down what's already been collected. And instead of distributing knowledge, they are distributing a destruction of knowledge. They are discouraging people from seeking knowledge by telling them that the truth is not worth pursuing because it's racist or it's sexist or whatever. So they're, instead of collecting and pursuing knowledge, they're destroying it. So that literally goes against the purpose of education. And then also you have people who have been profiting massively off of the dumbing down of education, which is another sign that it's a racket, that academia is a racket. Because while the cost of tuition has gone up much faster than inflation, the product that you receive, as I have covered in other episodes, has gone downhill precipitously. And that's not even just the case in college, but that's also the case in the K-12 school. So, as I pointed out in the earlier part of this episode, the K through 12 system is not blameless here. Because, you know, a good example would be that kids used to learn about the Odyssey and the Iliad. I remember learning about that. But then a lot of kids today, they have not learned about those things. Some kids even are not even learning about World War II, which is extremely sad because not only is World War II much closer to us, chronologically speaking, than ancient Greece, but World War II is something I would argue that is more important than the Iliad or the Odyssey, because those are works of fiction. And so they are not real. While the Holocaust and also the things that communism subjected millions of people to, because kids don't learn about that, are very real things. And because the Iliad and the Odyssey are works of fiction, their events could not happen in the real world. Because, among other things, there's only one God and his name is Jesus, and the Iliad and the Odyssey do reference false gods. So that is something that should be noted when teaching these kinds of things. However, the events of World War II, even if not the exact same details, same names, etc., the events, the genocide, the conquest, those types of things could happen again in real life. And again, even if it doesn't happen in the same parts of the world or the same other little details like that, the same general idea could happen again, unfortunately. Because World War II is a real thing that happened, and as I pointed out earlier, if history is not learned, it's more likely to be repeated. And so, because education has been so dumbed down, you have where people are not learning the same things that they should have been learning, and therefore are not going into the real world with the same set of knowledge and skill set that they would have had if they went to school earlier. And even the universities bend over backwards to accept kids who come from these dumbed down education systems. Especially up until recently in the name of DEI. And it could still be happening, but it's at least now illegal for them to discriminate in that way. And so I may have to further revisit this episode, clean it up a bit. But these are basically my thoughts, that academia is one big racket, that it charges high prices for low quality product, that the prices have been going up much faster than inflation, while the quality of the product has also gone down, product being the education you receive for the money you pay, that the academics waste a bunch of time focusing on style and formatting, so that they can get more preferential, maybe not preferential, because the due dates, deadlines would be the same for everyone, but more favorable due dates and deadlines for their work. And they can do less work, but still claim more time spent on that work, which allows them to also put out more inferior products, because they're not doing as much research, because so much of their time is being spent focusing on style and formatting and citations and such, rather than on actual collection of research. And because they spend time, you know, looking for in-text citations for stupid stuff like the color of the sky. And providing a proper in-text citation for said stupid stuff. You know, they waste their time doing stupid stuff like that, when they could be doing more research, which then brings down the quality of their work. Meanwhile, they're also pressured to put out more of this inferior work because of the tenure system. The tenure system and peer reviewing are also, among other things, systems that are set up to favor ideas that have already been agreed upon by the higher-ups. So they are set up to run on groupthink, meaning that new approaches and ideas and facts are shoved over to the sidelines. Also, the education, quote-unquote education, has been dumbed down, not only dumbed down, but also manipulated, and new fields have been created that instead of collecting and distributing knowledge, which is the purpose of education, they do the exact opposite, destroying what's already there and discouraging others from seeking out the truth. Fields that do this are often known as critical theories, such as critical gender and critical race theories. Also, the other thing to note is that these systems, these universities and other institutions, they tend to all lean one way for the most part, with a few exceptions, which means that the university system, the academic system, has become less of an educational system and more of a think tank with several satellite arms. And the reason that they have to claim that they're still educational in nature is because that preserves the social clout that they have with the public, because parents are going to be much more willing to send their children to a college or other educational institution than to go learn a curriculum at a think tank or a similar outfit. And also, in addition to the social clout, if an institution stops claiming that it is educational in nature, then it's going to be less able to collect donations, grants, etc., that educational institutions are meant to receive. So, of course, these institutions that are engaged in this behavior have to claim that they're educational, otherwise they lose all of those benefits. So, essentially, academia is one big, huge racket, because it is using dishonest means to extract, or not extract, but to get benefits that were designed for institutions that actually fulfilled the mission that was set out when these institutions or earlier institutions were founded. Because as I pointed out at the beginning of this episode, and I'm recapping here, I don't believe that the rot was always there. I do think that at least some of these early institutions were founded with the actual mission of creating a well-educated, well-ordered, well-rounded society with leaders that were, you know, well-rounded and well-educated and able to understand the world around them. So, those are my thoughts. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, or at least considered it to be a bit informative or food for thought. You can find this podcast on Spotify, Amazon Music, the RSS feed, iHeartRadio, and Pandora. You can also contact us on our Facebook page at Jesse's Fireside Chats, and you can send us an email if you'd like at jessesfiresidechats@gmail.com. That's Jesseas firesidechats@gmail.com. Or you can contact us on X at JFSCpod. And feel free to join the Facebook group. If you use Facebook, we'd love to have you over there, Fireside Chatter. I'm also considering some more projects. I'm considering a monthly or quarterly report to help recap you, because politics moves so fast that I have often found myself wishing someone would just recap me on the important events of the last month or 3 months. So I'm considering how often to do these kinds of recap reports for you, and I'm hoping to bring that to you. I'm also hoping to put together some video episodes. Not all episodes are easily made into videos because of the nature of the content, but I'm hoping to put together at least a few to help kind of increase our reach and help those of our more visual learners among us to be able to process more of the information. I'm working on one for the Medicare for None episode, and my life is crazy. I don't do this full time, so that one's been kind of slow coming, but I'm hoping to work on that. I'm also hoping to at some point finally get us onto Apple Podcasts, but again, as I said, I don't do this full time, so you're gonna have to bear with me a bit if not everything happens in as timely a fashion as you or I would like. But with all of that out of the way, thank you so much, and have a blessed day.